Welcome to Gente en Health, a podcast by the Center for the Study of Latino Health and Culture. I'm the center's director, Dr. David Hayes Bautista, otherwise known as the old Chicano professor. And this podcast is an extension of the research we have been part of for many years. So join us as we discuss the state of Latinos and as we unearth the voices of Gente en Health. Today, we have one of the more distinguished voices in Gente en Health, Dr. Ilan Shapiro, who is the Senior Vice President and Chief Health Correspondent for Altamed. In this role, Dr. Shapiro works closely with the Public Affairs, Community Affairs, Government Relations, and Civic Engagement Departments of Altamed to help expand community health and wellness initiatives. Dr. Ilan Shapiro has been with Altamed since 2016 and has significantly impacted the organization in the greater communities that it serves. He is a tireless advocate for healthcare equality with a deep affinity for innovation and public health policy, especially relating to the Latino population. Welcome, Dr. Shapiro, to the podcast, and thank you for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure to be with you and everybody that is hearing us right now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. At CESLAC, just 2 weeks ago, we had our inaugural Institute of the CESLAC All. That's A-L-L. That's the acronym for Accelerating Latinx Leadership. It's an institute to develop Latinx physician and other health professional leadership and to prepare them to help guide California's health sector institutions, be they hospitals, insurers, academic medical institutions, to positively engage with Latinx communities and with California's multiracial future. So, Dr. Shapiro, you were a participant in our inaugural class. I was wondering if you would mind sharing your experience of that weekend. I'm pretty sure in your professional career, you have doubtless attended a number of physician leadership programs. How was this one different?
Dr. Hayes Bautista, I usually am running and jumping, and it's very hard for my tushy to be in one place. But for three entire days, I was learning, and it shifted something inside of me. Usually, we hear a lot of the narrative, what we perceive from our Hispano community as something that, you know, there's a lot of problems, there's a lot of, you know, barriers, there's a lot of things, but rarely we get to actually amplify or interact with information that it's evidence-based, that it's actually on the good stuff that we're doing, on the outcomes of things that they don't supposed to be there, but we are accomplishing from the amazing power that we have as a community to safeguard our mental health and also our mortality rates. From that on to the point of conversation of, you know, are is the Hispano community important for health, for public health? And most importantly, the big question is, how can we actually use all these learnings from the community and actually amplify them? And the way that I saw it is, how can we create the vaccine to continue protecting us against all these things that are supposed to be happening and they are not?
It's amazing. I want to just ask you to unpack a couple of things. You mentioned a number of topics, and let's just go back, and I'd like to just have you explain a little bit more. For example, we were learning about the Latino epidemiological paradox. Now, for you as a provider, as a person in a position of leadership, what most surprised you learning about the Latino epidemiological paradox?
I had the pleasure to be in Altamed as the director of health education and wellness. And part of the things that we do and continue and did at that moment was to make sure that we were trying to prevent diabetes, mm-hmm. weight management, and other things related with sugar. And of course, the perception is that we do suffer a lot of diabetes in our community. We end after that, you know, problems with the heart, and other related diseases that, you know, can impact our mortality rates. If we have all these problems about poverty, lack of education, lack of many things and barriers in the social determinants of health realm, well, we're supposed to die more often, and we simply don't. if we compare ourselves to other communities, well, where they supposed to be healthier than us, actually, us as Hispanos, we're doing way better. And that even with everything that we saw during COVID-19, hearing that certain outcomes, that the perceived mortality rate for certain groups was actually higher than us, that actually was mind-blowing. Because there's a secret sauce there. There's something there that we know that it exists, but we cannot pinpoint it right now that it's there, that we need to be learning. That right now, a lot of the efforts and the lack of efforts or the lack of funding for this type of research has created a lot of opportunities to start a new conversation. Instead of figuring out, you know, like, with all this lack of resources, how can we improve diabetes? No, let's amplify what's the secret sauce? What's actually out there that it's making a huge difference to prevent mortality rates, to actually have a higher, longevity part of our lives compared to other, other communities? And my real position here is that there's a lot of good stuff that we need to start amplifying, and we need to change the narrative.
Amazing. Changing narratives. I'm just curious, you say changing the narrative. It sounds like you've heard the narrative of Latino health dysfunction, and then we share some data, and I love you call it evidence-based. Now, that's the latest buzzword in graduate medical education, is doing evidence-based medicine. But from what I see here, my colleagues here at UCLA often use racial narratives rather than evidence-based to educate their students. Have you ever run across problems with that, with faculty teaching students the wrong thing?
The thing that I have seen and I have felt is that a lot of the times we have certain stereotypes. And when we go to stereotypes, we cannot analyze or have like a big conversation of things. And I can tell you that from my Hispano livelihood that, you know, we have the narrative of pobrecitos, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of economical struggles there. We have diabetes, we have all this stuff, and we start piling up on the narrative. Then at the moment that we, you know, and that was one of the beautiful things about that weekend, that when you start going deep and you go to the real numbers and you go like, well, we're not that pobrecitos. Having the fifth largest economy of the world, that's not pobrecitos. And even with all the virus that we have had as a community, we're still continue to push forward in so many different healthcare fields. And you know, the statistics are there for mortality, longevity. One of the interesting things that we talked about on that weekend is how are our future mothers doing? They're supposed to have worse outcomes. And on reality, there's some protection there from the community. Then all of these things need to be actually highlighted, need to be actually understood, and most importantly, amplified. Because at the moment that we understand what's that secret sauce, we can actually pollinate other communities or even use new strategies and research to amplify that in our own community.
Amazing. On beyond salsa roja, salsa verde. You mentioned something else, the Latino GDP, that Latinos during the first year of COVID, in spite of all of that, had managed to create the world's fifth largest economy. Can you share with me your reactions when you first heard that?
When we see each other right now, if you're Mexican American, Puerto Rican, Cuban American, or whatever background you're coming from, you perceive that Hispanos have like that stereotypical thing of, you know, being humble, being, you know, like, you know, being there, doing the work, being essential workers. But at the moment that you see that number, the fifth largest GDP, even with all the craziness that happened during COVID-19, that's a superpower. That's the power that we need to integrate and actually push forward. Because even with all these barriers, we did that. imagine what we can do if we are taking care of a lot of other efforts and barriers that we have for our community. Because this doesn't just amplify the Latino or the Hispanic community. This amplifies everybody. If you consider yourself underrepresented, underserved, or completely mainstream, it doesn't matter. If we understand how can we empower this, and actually everybody wins.
Absolutely. Everybody wins. With a growing economy, everyone wins. And Latinos are the growth sector of the U.S. Latino GDP. I think quite often I talk to my colleagues here. Right now, I happen to be at my office in Westwood, but I'm on the board of White Memorial in Boyle Heights. And I tell my colleagues here that I'm going out to East L.A. and I have to go, ooh, aren't you afraid of getting carjacked? And I can tell them in full confidence, I am going to Boyle Heights, to East L.A., which is the living, breathing heart of the world's fifth largest economy. And that really gets their attention because they think, no, it's gangbangers. You're going to get carjacked. Nope. It is the beating heart of the world's fifth largest economy. Depends on your narrative. Do you choose to see the problem areas? And yes, diabetes is a problem. Yes, gangs are a problem. But every community has that. Or do you ever want to look at the positives? Push other communities, they love to boast about their positives. We also have our positives, but it's not part of the general narrative. Now, with that, I know one of your interests, Dr. Shapiro, has been to change that narrative that Latinos are takers. We just come up to live on welfare, as the then President Trump put it, to be narcos, rapists, violators, criminals. So what has been your thought about working it to change this narrative about Latinos? What's been your thinking ever since this institute 2 weeks ago?
A couple of things boiled up in my heart and my soul and in my mind. At the moment that we start perceiving ourselves as with opportunities, and we start seeing the light, the way that that I'm seeing the problems, and that boils up with representation. At the moment that we start thinking of representation, it's extremely powerful, because right now the perception is that we are the main dish, not a guest on the table. Then at the moment that I finish those 3 days, we want to portray, we want to bring, and we want to empower absolutely everybody to have the opportunity to create a new narrative. The powerful narrative of, I want to bring a better future for my kids. A narrative where, you know, we are part of a growing society, because we are. The thing is, right now, we need to start recognizing that part. Then right now, we know that everybody talks about the Hispano voting opportunity. And on reality, I'm going to be completely honest, I do not mind if they vote for the green team or the blue team or the red team or the purple. I really don't care. The thing is, until we are not there, we cannot change what's happening in our classes, our streets, our parks, the way that we eat, the services that we get, until we are on the table. That's why I prefer actually to be a guest and making sure that we are creating a huge list of invited guests rather than the main dish.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, I have heard you on Univision, particularly during the COVID crisis. You were a champion voice out there, getting information out to the community. You're very passionate about this. So I'm wondering if you could share with us your journey to where you are now, from wherever you started, you'd like to start. But I do believe I detect a little Chilango accent here and there. So can you just share your journey with us? How did you develop this passion?
Completamente. And I always joke when I'm doing interesting engagements, speaking engagements, that I have a jalapeño attached to my throat, and that I'm so sorry for that part. In reality, I'm not that sorry, but, you know, it's a jalapeño there. Born and raised in Mexico City, was there until I was probably like 20-something years old. Did my MD career, and I told my parents that I wanted to be an international doctor. And when you translate public health policy to Spanish, it translates to salud y política. It actually goes more on the politics part of it. There's really no good word about policy in Spanish. Then you can imagine, you know, the first doctor directly from my mom and dad, and they're doing all this effort to have me there. And suddenly I tell them that I went to be a doctor and a politician. That's where they were hearing, and they almost died. Then when I started med school in Mexico, I finished there, and I had the opportunity to actually go on public health policy. I used to be the liaison between Mexico and the WHO, the World Health Organization, and I loved it. I saw the interesting part of the difference of my pueblitos, my little towns in Mexico, and the services that we had, and how that was actually being translated to an international policy forum. My feeling there was that there were more than 160 divorced parents fighting for one kid, and that kid was the world. Then I understood the importance of being there and changing policy. It's a slower process, but it has a higher impact rate that we can actually improve things. At that moment, we were talking about alcohol, we were talking about tobacco, mortality in moms. Then it was a very fruitful moment in my career. And after that, I pursued pediatrics, and I love it, love it, love it, love it. At the moment that we have kids as patients, they open your heart. And even for the worst moments where there's not much to do, but just being there and trying to move forward, that actually makes a difference. Ended up in Chicago in my training. And that's where Dr. Hayes Bautista, that I started doing a lot of media, and I understood what was happening. My first pandemic, my first time that I was involved in a pandemic was in 2009 with the H1N1 influenza problems that we had. Of course, there was no Google Translate. The way that it was translated in Spanish to our community was horrible. And we had amplified problems that, like the ones that we saw in COVID-19, where our community was afraid. They were afraid of, you know, going to public health centers, to getting the vaccine, to actually getting the treatment. Then I started seeing a lot of people going out there, not transmitting information that was actionable, information that actually our communities could go like, well, yeah, it's worth doing it or not worth doing it, or these are, you know, like not real stuff. Then I starting to write letters to local TV stations. And from there on, one day, one of the interviewers was not there. I left the script, and they asked me to actually present the note. And I was very frustrated before because, you know, as a physician, I can see maybe 30 patients, 40 patients in a 12-hour day with a lot of staff and a lot of things. Then if I wanted to reach the Chicago community, that is on the millions, I needed to stop having a wife, a dog, a life, or actually doing other stuff and even stop my residency in order to actually convey that message to all the patients that I wanted to be seen in my office. But this way, it was a great amplifying way to start conversations and at least give some opportunities to our community that they are running from one work to another, two or three jobs, a lot of barriers. But that way I felt that I was moving forward with, you know, with a message.
Amazing. This is during your residency. Wow.
Yes. In my quote unquote 80-hour weekdays.
duty hours. Okay, so you finished your residency. How did your journey continue after that?
I carried a lot of, you know, with H1N1, I got close to the Mexican consulates. I saw a huge disparity between people that were undocumented, mixed family status, that actually created problems with gathering information, education, medical information, and services. Then I started to work a lot and closely with them to make sure that, to give tools to the community, no options, and making sure that they were safe. Moving forward, I had the pleasure and opportunity to work with migrant communities in Fort Myers, Florida. this is actually, you have Miami, you have the West Coast, that's actually near the West Coast, near a place called Immokalee. That is one of the poorest areas that we have in the States. It was mind-blowing because we always have this feeling that the US healthcare or system actually, it's kind of balanced. But there were places that there was no running water, there was no electricity, there was not a lot of things. And with migrant workers, as we know, you know, maybe they don't even speak Spanish. Then I had to adjust to a lot of things that I was never exposed to. And that made me grow. That made me understand the importance of having conversations, understanding the cultural part of it, and making sure that we had the tools to communicate with each other. And I became an avid proponent of promotoras, healthcare workers that make a huge difference. I saw the passion in their eyes, and not only that, the power that they actually have to go out there and convey a lot of the times even better messages for the community in a way that it was actually understood and it was actionable for them to do, from diabetes, from vaccines, to high blood pressure, preventing certain things, that they were a powerful source of healthcare equity, equality, and diversity to reach out the communities that usually nobody engages with. Then that power I started to harness. And moving forward, looking for a new opportunity, I heard something about Altamed, and that was in 2015. Don't tell anybody, but the first job, I was actually exed. And after that, I was on the area, and I had an amazing conversation, and I started to be the medical director for health, education, and wellness, where I had the pleasure and opportunity to do a lot of mental health, to be the medical director for mental health, create employee health and other opportunities inside of Altamed that could amplify with this amazing structure to amplify the health of our communities in the streets, in the communities, and also using media as a tool for education.
Amazing, amazing. Well, if you're a human being like the rest of us, occasionally we try something and it doesn't work out. But if we learn from it, that's okay. Would you like to share an experience with us of something you wanted to do, but it just didn't happen, and what you learned from it?
Dr. Jaime Bautista, 100%. And probably I can write a book of how many doors I have actually struggled to open or actually like burnt. One of the things that I kind of failed, but it opened a great opportunity. I really thought that I was going to end up doing pediatrics in Miami. During your med career, you do rotations, you amplify your work, you create your network. And at the moment that there's a process called match, that's where you apply for a residency spot for your training, and there's like a lottery system, and they tell you that day, where are you going? Then I was between Chicago and Miami. Miami was my thing. I used to love that area. I did my rotations. I did a lot of things, and I didn't get it. I didn't get it. And at that moment, I felt that I was going to get married. We're thinking about where to live. You know, like we started actually moving stuff to the area, and didn't happen. Then I failed completely to see that there's things that are not in our hands and we need to flow. But because of that flow, I ended up in Chicago and creating all these amazing things with the H1N1 and the community, Mexican consulates, binational health. And that was one of them. Another one that I did fail, I started actually an MPH in 2011. Master's in Public Health. And during that process, I thought, you know, like everybody's having extra letters there after your name. And I loved it. Was extremely stimulating. I was surviving and doing great with work, family, and also the educational component of it. But I failed to see what actually those letters were going to actually bring me. They, you know, I love academics. I love teaching, but I'm not that well of a researcher, and I know my limits there. Then I couldn't, you know, I was not seeing, I was doing the movements to get more education, but at the same time, I was not seeing what tools I actually needed for administration, for difficult conversations, to actually manage a budget. Then I did decide at that moment to just take a hold on that part and move to another type of educational movement. And that actually helped me grow in the inside part of being realistic of the tools that I needed and not just pursue little letters afterwards and actually be more concrete on the things that can make a huge difference for me and the patients that I was taking care of.
Amazing. It's a very good piece of wisdom, understanding your limits. You can't do everything. There are certain things you can do well. For example, I'm not a very good debater. You are, Dr. Shapiro. I've seen you. So you can handle things. People can ask you questions and you're just very happy responding. And I am a researcher, but people can say something like the moon's made out of green cheese. And the researcher in me says, well, the probability is pretty small, but let me go and check the data on this. And of course, you've lost the debate. So that clearly is not my strength, but it is your strength. And that's really important. Now, what are you strong at? What are you good at? What do you enjoy? And what are the things that you don't enjoy that you're not good at, that you're not strong in? That's a very important lesson to learn. And sometimes the only way to learn it is to try something and not succeed. Then you have to ask yourself, okay, what did I learn? And where do I go next? That's a fascinating, fascinating piece of wisdom. Okay, so it's interesting. I know at AltaMed there are programs for pre-health professionals, particularly pre-meds, et cetera. When a pre-med comes to you and says, I want to be just like you, what do you say? How do you
Don't respond? Be. Don't be. That's the first thing that it actually comes from my mind. Mm-hmm. We have all these perceptions of the way that our career is supposed to go. And I call them like little candles on the dark that like, you know, like in El Día de los Muertos that you put actually when you're going to the cemetery, you put all these candelarias and you're walking and walking, but they are just marking a path. That's not the only one. Then from, yes, you don't want to be like me. I go around that question and I explain why. Medicine and healthcare right now is non-linear. The part of you going to med school, suffering residency, suffering the first years of your life, and actually, you know, ending up at 75, trying to retire, and suffering everything, that's gone. That's really gone. Right now, we need a physician that actually understands their passions, and we need to see patients. That's extremely important. But also, what do you add to the pot? Are you adding technology? Are you adding biochemistry, biotechnology? Are you, you know, modifying genes? Are you doing research? Are you in public health? And making sure that, yes, you want to get here and see patients, and what else are you bringing to the table? Are you, right now, that artificial intelligence is, it's kind of in our top minds of all of us. Are you learning that? You understand the impact, or at least how can you use it right now and in the future to bring better apps, applications from physical therapy to actually getting your kids to get vaccinated? How are we leveraging that part? And that's where I get them excited, that a lot of the times we just forget about joy and adding, you know, value to the activities that we have. Then for me, for example, is the part of, you know, communicating, speaking engagement, and making sure, and I have this phrase that happened in COVID-19 that I try to translate medicalish to an actionable language. And that's my mission in life right now, to make sure that whatever information I'm giving to my community, that they have the option to use it or not, but at least they will not have the excuse that I didn't know, or nobody told me, or where can I get that? They will know, and you know, they can choose. It's like a menu. That's the way that I perceive it. It's a menu. They can choose. Maybe for me it's something delicious, maybe for them it's deadly allergic, and that's okay. But at least putting it on the table and in that menu, that's one of the most important things that for future students I try to portray. And one thing that I didn't learn, but right now it's extremely important, is making sure that we are taking care of ourselves and each other. That's something that, you know, I trained in Mexico, and it was the old way of being trained. Then, you know, you could stay many, many days in the hospital. You can actually have this very hierarchical way of doing things. And we still have problems here in the US. But right now, we need to amplify the opportunities to take care of each other, our health, our mental health, because you don't want a sick doctor, you know, after so many years, you don't want to be that sick doctor or be completely unhappy of the things that you're doing. Then combine mm-hmm. that joyful secrets that you have, combining that superpower of taking care of yourself, and at the end of the day, the mission of seeing patients is the most rewarding part of it.
That's amazing. That would be, I think, good recipe for anybody in any field, or in fact, anybody. You sort of work through different fields, is finding your joy, taking care of yourself, and you do more for others. In graduate medical education, this issue of provider wellness, particularly through COVID, has become a really important topic because a lot of residents were, quite frankly, feeling burned out there. But what do? Close the doors and tell people we're not going to admit patients today? So no. Duty hours were an issue. Can we do something else beside COVID? But that was the emergency of the day. But it's an important topic. So how do we as professionals, as Latinos, as leaders, also remember to take care of our inner self? What brings us joy? What brings us spiritual solace? And make sure that we include that as part of just our daily living. And with that, just one final question, I guess, speaking of provider wellness and having gone through COVID, if you could just give us some thoughts and comments about provider wellness and when providers didn't do the wellness, your experience with that.
Dr. Hayes Bautista, I'm going to tell you a little secret that it's La Dieta del Dr. Shapiro, the Dr. Shapiro diet. I'm probably going to one day write a book on this. It's actually taking all the temptations around your life to make it easier and grow and be healthier. The same way we have, you know, like those amazing snacks that we love inside of our house. And we make it, you know, like we want to do exercise, but we haven't bought like the appropriate shoes to go running. Then we can do a lot of things that make our health and wellness very, very, very well known. Then the part of actually eating well, it's crucial. And I know that we have multiple excuses of not doing that, but the more we do that, the better health. And the way that I perceive it is that it's kind of using appropriate gas inside of your car. If you go to the high-end one, your engine will actually run smoother and longer. And if you don't, and you're not changing the tires and you're not rotating them and you're not doing all this stuff, well, your car will not go fast or for long. Then we need to take care of that body. The other part is sleeping. Sleeping is key for all of us. And I know with stress and everything else, you know, was it the chicken or the egg, or I have, you know, we can debate all that stuff, but making sure that we have healthy sleeping routines as providers, it's crucial. Some of the times we are the worst ones with that. Apart from diet and sleeping, the exercise component. I try to wake up very early in the morning, around 4 a.m., to actually start my day in order to be doing movements. Is it easy? No, I hate it every morning. Every morning I hate waking up, but I love the sensation after I finish my exercise routine, because I know that the moment that I skip it, I feel horrible. I feel sluggish. I'm not, you know, if it was a stressful day, I cannot attack the problem the way that it's supposed to be attacked. Then combining that part and the sense of community. As physicians, we see the best things of the world, and even any healthcare provider, we see the best things of life and the worst things, from mental stuff, medical stuff, horrible stories, or amazing miracles. But all of them take a toll on us, then we need to make sure that we are measuring our stress measurements, if we're depressed, anxious, and right now actually talk about our own mental health. And if we are perceiving someone else that it's going that route, let them know that you're there. And it's not that we are mental health specialists to coach them out of it. No, sometimes just saying, and we're seeing a lot of, you know, sadly, a lot of physicians dying from suicide at many stages, and even medical students, residents, attendings, that sadly, because of the pressures, the everything that it's combined, it's sadly a ticking time bomb. Then we need to make sure that we're taking care of each other and we're present there. And when we ask someone, how are you? Actually hearing the answer makes a huge difference. And if we know that they are suffering, maybe they will say, well, you know what? I'm good. Let them know that you're there for them. Call them back. Give another text. Sometimes you maybe will be saving a life. Then that's the other thing that we need to take care of each other, because, you know, I was reading some statistics, you know, one in every five healthcare providers during COVID-19 actually decided to switch careers to other fields. And that probably is going to get worse in the following years. Then if we don't take care of each other and we're not there for our patients and for our community, we will not make it.
Well, I think we've just heard Dr. Schapeto's secret sauce: caring for one another, being there for one another, thinking about one another. What an amazing contribution. All right. I think you have given us a very good blueprint, not for being a physician, but just for being a very well-rounded, happy, self-actualized person in today's society. I think there's a lot we could all take from you on this. Thank you so much for sharing your philosophy and y sobre todo, Dr. Schapeto's secret sauce for health, wellness, and longevity. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. Well, that's all for this week. Thank you all for listening, and please remember to subscribe if you haven't done so. And by the way, if you'd like to support us, you can go to our website and click on that little support us button. Any and all contributions to CESLEC are greatly appreciated. These contributions do help us continue our work with our podcast, our research, public service, and our educational activities. Our executive producers for this week are Adriana Valdez and Seda Santiso Greenwood. Our writers are Brandy Lopez and Giselle Hernandez. Editing is being provided by Elias Rodriguez, and music this week is being provided by Mariachi de Uclatlan. Tune in for the next episode as we delve further into topics of Latino culture, gente, and health.